42 Days ethos is to build solutions for hospitality businesses to retain and develop their team. We believe that the first 42 days, the first 6 weeks of someone's employment in any industry, but especially the world of hospitality, is so competitive, fast-paced, and intense. We have an opportunity to reshape that narrative. Our team has extensive experience in the hospitality industry, so we know what it takes to keep your team happy and engaged. We'll work with you every step of the way to create a plan that works best for your business. Go to 42days.co to book a consultation.
Principle of Hospitality podcast. My name is Kayleen and thank you for joining me today. Principle of Hospitality has been developed to tell the stories of professionals within the dynamic world of hospitality. We are a straight-talking, ethically minded, and a reliable online source of information and inspiration for people in the hospitality industry. Now, today I'm really lucky to have in the studio with me John Rivera, a Filipino-born Australian chef better known for his very successful gelato business, Caraton. He has been in the hospitality industry since he was 18 and has worked at some of Australia's best restaurants, such as Attica, Bray, and Amaru. He was also selected to represent the Pacific region at the San Pellegrino Young Chef Competition in 2018. Welcome, John, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedule to chat with me today.
Hey, Kayleen. No, it's my pleasure to be part of this podcast. I know I think we've been trying to tee it up for a while now, but a few sicknesses have gotten in the way.
That's okay. So tell me, obviously you've been busy opening the new Chinatown branch of Caraton. How's that been for you?
It's been great. It's been really well received. I think we're in a really nice community there in China. It's funny to say that in community because people kind of just come in and out of Chinatown to eat and whatnot. But I say community because we feel really at home. Like it feels like we're within our people. It's been really well received. It's been manic. I knew that Chinatown was known for its late nights, but man, does it get crazy at night. But it's been amazing so far. It's been definitely a chance to grow personally and professionally. And we're just taking it a day at a time.
All right. So, on that note, how about you just start by telling us how your journey as a chef started?
Yeah, well, I guess I've always been really interested in food. I was a fat kid, I was fat. I love food. My mum used to hide snacks from me.
Oh my God, really?
But I'm like a sniffer dog. I would find it. Either she was terrible at hiding them or I was just attracted to food. High school was a funny time for me because not funny time, but it's not like I wasn't bad at school, but the way I knew I would learn better was through experience or doing things. Right after high school, I knew I couldn't spend another 4 or 5 years in uni, in front of a desk, in front of a lecture, doing all that boring stuff. And I really needed to get out there and do something with my hands or learn practically. And I guess during that time too was when MasterChef started and all these cooking shows started. So all of these things, my interest started peaking in cooking, and I just thought, why not? And I right out of high school, I went to William Angliss, TAFE. I studied patisserie there.
Oh, really? So
I did my Cert 4 in patisserie at William Angliss.
Wow.
Funny story, because I wanted to drop out at year 10. I want to be back to my parents. I'm like, well, technically, in Australia, I only have to go to school till year 10. And typical immigrant Asian parents were like, that's the dumbest thing I heard.
Yeah.
Stay in school, which I'm really grateful for. I have a lot of young kids who work for me now who want to become chefs too and are like, should I leave high school now to pursue it? And, you know, I just tell them from my experience, like, year 11, year 12 are some of the best years that you'll have in your life.
Yep.
And you'll never be able to get that experience back or replicate it.
Yep.
An extra 2 years really doesn't, like, slow your career down. And it's really a chance for you to just spend those last 2 years with your friends, because you never know what will happen. Like, you might just, like, go your separate ways and, you know, life takes a course and whatever. But anyway, yeah, I went to William Angler, studied patisserie. That's where I met Min, who is one of my very, very good friends and now one of my business partners for Carrieton.
Wow.
That's another funny story because, like, patisserie is like, well, when we were there, it was like 90% female.
Yeah.
And, you know, the girls would always, like, already have their groups and they'd group together. And I transferred into this class and, like, I came late. Typical Filipino me, came late to class. and the only person left was Min. So I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm working with this international student. And he thought the same way. I was like, this guy is an international student. So we did not talk for like the first hour of that class.
Oh my gosh.
And then eventually we, like, you know, broke the ice somehow. We're like, wait, hold on. Like, you're actually from here? Or, like, you know.
Yeah.
And then we ended up just having so many, like, common interests and in soccer and our, like, very dark humor. and now we became very, very good friends, and it's really funny how that came about. So, yeah, I did patisserie, and then I ended up, whilst I was studying in TAFE, I was working as a waiter and a food runner at Rockpool Bar and Grill.
Yeah.
Which, like, for any young chef out there, whoever's listening, like, I would suggest to try your hand at front of house as well.
Yeah.
Because those two or so years that I spent in front of house to learn that craft of actually serving food, serving wine, dealing with guests, dealing with customers, is really valuable for your cooking as well, like understanding beverages, understanding wine. That was so formative for me.
Yeah.
And I think that gave me a lot of maturity going into the kitchen as well.
Yeah.
So after I finished my course, I sweet talked this pastry chef, the pastry chef at Rockpool, Stefan, to give me a job essentially. And I thought I made it, man. I thought I was like, man, straight out of the gate, two hat restaurant, I made it. Look at me. I got my first prep list and, like, I struggled. I went down. and that was such a humbling moment because I was like, you know.
Why did you go down?
Oh, I just, like, I was so slow. I had, like, maybe five things on the prep list that we started at 8. I had to get it done by 12. I had maybe, like, 4 or 5 things in the prep list. And I did, like, 2. And, like, on that first day.
Do you remember what were the things that tripped you up?
Yeah, it was just, like, A, not knowing where everything was.
Yeah.
Although I should have, because I already been working there for, like, 2 years.
Yeah.
But also, I guess, just, like, still being on student time. You know, when you're in TAFE and, like, you can kind of just stroll along and kind of get things done, like, you got plenty of time.
Yeah, there's no sense of urgency, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's a safety net because you're allowed to mess up because you know that it's not going to affect, like, the day's prep, or it's not going to affect any food costs or whatever. So I was just going on my own time.
Yeah.
And I just realized that everyone around me was, like, zooming along because they had a million other things to do. And that was the first time, like, I like, first day, like, just even before my first service, I got my first slap on the wrist, like, dude, you're too slow. I still remember Stefan saying, man, like, that prep list should have been finished in, like, 2 hours. And, but that was a really good wake-up call because, like, first day, it was just like,
yeah,
it's got to be pedal to the metal. And working with that crew, I guess, really brought the best out of everybody. It was such a great crew back then. I think that was, like, 20 2014.
Yeah.
That was when the likes of Rob, and like for anyone who knows City Larder and Patisserie out there, like Robbie Bell, who is the owner and the creator of City Larder and Patisserie. He was my sous chef back then, along with some of the other chefs who work with Robbie now, in Zach Nicholson and Chris Budichin and all that. And they were just constantly pushing. And it was such simple food,
but
it was such great technique. And like, I think that was such an important place for me to start, because it just taught me the basics. And like, everything that we learned there was like, walk before you run. You know, one of the things that the chefs told me was that you never build a house on a weak foundation. Right. So like, every young chef wanted to become Heston and make, like, you know,
get three Michelin stars.
You know, make something look like something that it isn't. But before you do that, you got to learn the basics and you got to learn the craft. And that was really great. From there, I ended up at the original Rockpool in Sydney, working with Under Phil Wood. And that was for me, not just professionally, but personally, that was a big eye-opener. Moving to a new city, moving out of home. I was the youngest of, I'm the youngest in my family and the youngest of my extended family too, out of like 20 cousins.
Wow.
So I was always used to being babied, like, you know, come home, throw your laundry in the basket, food's ready, sleep in whenever you want. So moving to Sydney and being really independent was a massive learning curve for me, as well as juggling all the other responsibilities of life, like rent and, you know, making sure I had enough money to eat and going to work and all that, and going to work by myself and figuring all that out. And that was my first fine dining experience. And once again, another eye-opener, because like, the intensity went up like 10 notches. Like, these guys, the way they work, like how sharp they were, how focused they were every day, was outstanding. So I really loved my time at the Rockpool Group. It was one of the probably the best start I could have ever asked for in my career. I just got homesick. I got really, really homesick.
How long were you in Sydney for?
I was there for about 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. From like 2014 to 2016.
Yeah.
And I just got really homesick. It's tough when you grow up in Melbourne and you're so used to the Melbourne lifestyle and all your friends and family are here, and then all of a sudden you're in a bit of an island over in Sydney.
So what do you think what do you think the biggest difference is, food-wise and culture-wise, between Melbourne and Sydney, that you've lived in both cities? Like, there's always this constant, like, you know, like sibling rivalry between both the cities, as I would so kindly put it. Like, how do you feel like difference-wise with food and with the people who come and dine with you and the culture?
I it's funny, because I was just there like this weekend, and kind of absorbing a lot of everything there. And in a way, being a Melburnian, or when you're from Sydney, being a Sydneysider, like, there is that subconscious need to compare the two cities. You know, I think Sydney is geared to be super corporate. Or not so super corporate. It's geared to be corporate. So, like, even looking back at my time when I was working at Rockpool, like, it just felt like everyone I encountered in the CBD were all suits, like head down, on the phones, or on the way to the next meeting. Like, it was a real rat race. And I feel like you see that in some of the people that that dine out, or some of the restaurants within the CBD are geared towards. Like, by no means is that bad. Like,
it's just a different crowd.
It's a different crowd. And I think growing up Melburnian, like, we take our time. We eat late, we sleep late, we, you know, we go out late. And I think, you know, that is a big part of that is that Sydney lockout, which, it's a shame really, because we were, mind you, it was a Monday night, but we were trying to look for somewhere to kind of celebrate San Pellegrino, after the award ceremony. This was 11:30, and it was pretty difficult to find like somewhere
that was open
to just chill out and drink, and it was open. Like, you know, if Monday night in here in Melbourne, I'm pretty sure you and I could name 10 bars that, you know, we could easily go to. And stay till probably like 3 a.m. So, yeah, look, Sydney's great though. Like the other, the inner suburb area, like Newtown, Surrey Hills, even Chippendale is really, really great now too. Like they're all really, really cool, but it's all almost like it's like enclaves in Sydney. Like it's all super like regional. People can't see me doing the whereas here in Melbourne, I feel like it's just easy to go to the city. And for example, if you're like on Russell Street and you wanted to get down to Flinders, or you wanted to get down to Spencer Street, for example, like it's just an easy like tram ride down, and you wouldn't have to even like think about it. Whereas Sydney is just like, okay, am I walking it? Am I taking the light rail? Am I busing? Like, how do I do it? Yeah. One thing I will say it's great, absolutely great about Sydney public transport is that you can tap on with your bank card, with like your AT.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. Oh, wow. So I was just using my phone the whole time, and it was, it's amazing.
I still don't get the, I still don't get the Mikey system in Melbourne, to be honest. And I've lived here like over 10 years already. And if someone overseas came and asked me like, how does your train system work? I'll be like, I have no idea.
It's on rails. It moves forward.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, like Melbourne, step up, like, you know, let's get these like bank cards, because it's all coming out of the same account anyway.
Exactly. And also like to have, like sometimes you don't even have your Mikey. Do you know what I mean? It's like, who carries cards around anymore as well?
Yeah, or maybe like you can put it on your phone now, but you and I just don't know. And then people in the comment section are just like,
hello, this is already on. Like you can already put your Mikey on your phone. I'm like,
Wake up, guys.
So obviously you've opened Carreton in Footscray.
Mm-hmm.
How would you say it compares to opening, like, I mean, Footscray is a very unique suburb on its own.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, opening Carreton in Footscray, kind of a no-brainer, because, you know, you've got a great audience there who understand and appreciate the flavors that Carreton brings forward. But how do you feel the crowd differs from Footscray now that you're in Chinatown?
Well, I guess, like, looking back, why we opened in Footscray? We both live out in the West, and after doing all the deliveries in lockdown, we could not be bothered crossing that bridge one more time. So that was one of the reasons why Footscray was our first choice. But also because I guess like being Westies, like we knew that this was our people.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
Of course.
I guess, Carreton as well, being inspired by Dirty Ice Cream, it has that rough around the edges feel to it, or, you know, it has that grit. And for us, Footscray has always had that beautiful grit. You know, it's had a bit of a taboo or a reputation over the years, but you can't argue, like, you know, you can't argue that it's such a cultural hub now.
Yeah.
It's such an amazing suburb, affluent suburb, that's just always developing.
I think it's so underrated as well, Footscray. Like people always talk about Richmond, you know, because I guess it's close to the city, whereas Footscray is kind of like a bit of a journey. But I've always felt Footscray is so underrated. So much good food there.
It is. It's amazing. The community is amazing. It's such a wide like variety of food. You got a great African presence there. You've got obviously the Vietnamese have like stalwarts in Barclay and Hopkins Street. It's actually one of the best Indian restaurants I've had, just around the corner from Carreton in Footscray, that does authentic Hyderabadi biryani that's out of this world.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. I think because it's, look, it's funny you say like Richmond is close to the city, but like, you know, if you're coming from Flinders Street, the both kind of the same.
Yeah, distance. I guess it depends on which side you're coming from.
Yeah, I think people have just kind of had this association with the west side of town being
the gritty side of town.
In terms of, I guess, like clientele or the customers, like Footscray is definitely more family orientated. You know, we see a lot of more day trade there, and I guess that's also because of the market being open six days a week.
Yeah,
6 days a week. And a lot more, families are dropping in on the way home from work, or picking up their kids, and ordering more things that they can enjoy at home as well. And Saturday, Sundays, we see a lot of like Saturday, Sunday arvos, one of our busiest times.
Yeah.
Like it beats some of like the nights that we do. Whereas like the CBD is, I guess, we feed off of that that night trade that's all around us on Russell Street in Chinatown. There's a lot more activity like after work, where people finish off work or uni and they head down, or, you know, people are just going out for dinner with mates and come down. It's definitely like they're both quite diverse in terms of, I guess, demographic, in terms of culture or background, which is great, which is what we, one of the things that I always wanted to do with my career, my personal goals was to just share the Filipino culture with people. So to see not just Filipinos coming in and loving what we do, but, you know, Aussies and, you know, Italians, they're the scariest ones when it comes to gelato. Because they're like, what? Purple yam in gelato. But, you know, all these different cultures coming in and enjoying it, it's absolutely great. I don't know if I actually answered your question properly there, but I just like to ramble on if you haven't noticed.
That's okay. I enjoy listening to all the things that you have to say, but I have to say, I have to backtrack a little bit. So obviously you have all this great, you know, experience in all these fine dining restaurants. So going from that into the gelato business, it must have been a really big jump in a sense, even though you have started with a foundation in patisserie. So I think my question is, how did you make that decision to go from working in all these very acclaimed restaurants and, you know, like being the, like hitting such great teams in these, like, you know, award-winning restaurants to wanting to open your own gelato business?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I hope we have enough time to cover it.
Plenty, don't worry.
Look, to be honest with you, and after a lot of self-reflection, like, after my last job, after my exec job at Lume, like, I was really burnt out, and I was like, I guess, angry with myself, or I don't know who I was really angry with. I was really frustrated. I guess, like, it was the culmination of me cooking for my ego.
Yeah.
And that is an easy thing to get caught up in when you're in the whole system of this fine dining thing. Like, you're cooking for the awards, you're cooking for the accolades. Like, San Pellegrino Young Chef was great. That was a massive achievement, and I'm super proud of that.
Yeah.
And everything I learned from that was priceless. But, like, you know, as a young chef, rubbing shoulders with greats and, you know, like being written about and talked about and recognized and all this stuff, it's great, but it feeds your ego. And it fed my ego that I was like, I can do whatever and I can do anything that I guess, like, I was doing it because I wanted to keep getting those accolades, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, I felt like that's what we're programmed to feel like, with 50 best and all these hats and all these rating systems and all these lists. You can't help but get caught up in it.
Yeah.
I had my 15 minutes of fame. But it all came kind of crashing down when I realized I tried to do too much at Lume, like with my food. Like, it was, I took out, I didn't consider the actual making food that people wanted to eat part of it.
Yeah.
I was more about like, look at me, look at what I can do. Look at me flex everything I know. And like, I still remember the day because I was like, I was at Jakarta Culinary Festival. I had just like finished doing a big demo, a big takeover at Mandarin Oriental in Jakarta when I was flown over, like partying with like Julian Riere the night before and Richie Lin and all these other like big chefs, and it was great. It was a fun time. Come home, oh no, go back to the hotel room. That was the night the awards were happening, and like I was like, oh, it's odd that we didn't get invited. I was like, oh, you know, maybe, blah, blah, blah. I get a text from my friend. It's just like, hey, man, sorry. Like, yeah, you didn't get a hat. Like, you just lost two hats, just like that.
And oh, my God.
I was like, can I swear on this thing?
Yeah, sure.
I was like, gosh. Like, shit. Like, you know, that's the censored version. And then, you know, it was like coming home with my tail between my legs and having to, like, talk to my staff or talk to my team in the kitchen, like, you know, we'll bounce back next year, we'll work hard, you know, this is just a trial, they're just testing us, blah, blah, blah. But deep inside I was just like I hated myself, like, yeah. It sucks. And then, you know, I kind of quit that. I quit Lume, got married, and I remember sitting like in the hotel after we got married. Not like right after we got married, sitting in the hotel. No. We was like a few days later, I was just sitting there reflecting. I was like, you know what, babe? Like, maybe I don't want to cook anymore. Like, maybe like I just don't want to do this anymore. I wasn't enjoying it. Like, I was so angry. So frustrated. I just didn't want to do it. And then COVID happened. Fast forward, COVID happened and I didn't have a job, and Min kind of tapped me on the shoulder and was like, hey, why don't we just try something, do some gelato and do all that? It'd give us a bit of money whilst we're not working, but it's also a way for us to get out of the house, because we'll make an excuse that we're delivering essential services to all over Melbourne. And that really brought back my love for food.
It
represents my personality and what I actually love most about food, and that's just like making great food that makes people happy and puts a smile on their face. It's never about me. It was never about us as chefs. It's always about what your food can do to other people and the joy that can bring. And so that really like kind of revitalized me, and I just realized that like, yeah, that fine dining time was great, and you know, I don't regret it at all, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be in the position I am now with my skill or with my understanding of food and the industry. But I just knew that it wasn't for me anymore.
Yeah.
And the hardest part, I guess, about jumping from that, and I said this to my wife, jumping from being a chef to owning a business that made gelato, was knowing that you can still produce what you wanted to produce as a fine dining chef, and just letting go of that.
Yeah.
But you know, you swallow that pill, you rip the Band-Aid off, and it's probably one of the best decisions I've made in my life, because now I've found actual real joy in it.
Yeah.
And it's real, true, honest success.
And I guess also like being in this like, well, in the gelato game right now, I guess you're also no longer at the mercy of all those critics. Not so much critics, but all those awards and guides and stuff like that, because you've kind of more or less found your own stream to kind of swim up, in a sense. Like, you know, I mean, obviously, like working in restaurants that have accolades, I guess that's the biggest stress, like that you've explained. You know, it's being at the mercy of all the people that are constantly watching your every move.
Yeah, it's part of this. Like, everybody remembers the jubilation when you achieve what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
But then it's that stress later of keeping up to that standard.
Yeah.
Because it's always great going up, but then it's like a lot of questions and murmurs going down, which I actually don't like agree with. It's like, why do we have to, looking back now, it's not just because I'm like, people might say I'm bitter because I never got my hat. I don't care. But now I look back and it's like, what is really the need to start raiding these places? Because, for example, right, like me, as now I own a gelato business, and yourself as well, you're connected to a gelato business. Like, let's just, for example, let's just say, like, somebody might really, really like Carrotton,
yeah,
and not like Bocca.
Yeah.
But, and then it could go vice versa. Some people could really, really, really love Bocca and not like Carrotton. And it's so subjective. So then why are we, like, all of a sudden ranking subjectivity?
Yeah.
So I think that's really unfair, for especially for a lot of people who do try really hard in their business. And food and hospitality is, like, not easy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not easy. So, like, it's, yeah, it's like, why do we need to rank?
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said, like, it's great now. We're kind of in our own stream. We don't have to worry about that. Not that, like, I have any personal vendetta against
any
reviewers
all.
Yeah. Or critics or whatever. Like, I love all you guys. You guys are all cool. But, you know, yeah, like, don't have to deal with kind of that anymore. But, you know, there's always Google reviews, which is always great.
But I think it's also, I feel as if you're living that moment, like, you know, in that movie, what is the one of, I think its name, is it called Chef? The one that he left a fine dining business to go and open a food truck. And then he's like, you know what, whatever. I don't care about these critics anymore. I just want to do my own thing. I want to make food that makes people happy. And that's all that really matters at the end of the day, is that your food brings joy to someone who comes into your shop and has it, really.
Yeah, you know what? That's really funny, because we were literally just talking about that, these movies. We were actually, like, talking about ranking. Oh, it's ironic now that I say ranking, right? but, like, you know, chef-themed movies. And I was saying that, like, I love Chef more than I love Burnt.
Yeah.
Watch Burnt. I can, like...
relate a lot more?
Relate to both of them. But I like Chef more, because I guess now, yeah, as you say, I, now that I think about it, I am kind of living that
yep.
I'm just kind of doing what I want now, and it doesn't have to be on a pretty ceramic plate that's handmade for me for the restaurant, you know, like, it's still the same quality as this gelato that's in this paper cup or in this waffle cone. And as I said, that's the best decision I made in my life. Like, it means that I got a great work-life balance. I can spend more time with my wife and my little baby boy. Do the stuff that I used to miss out on. Just, like, things such as social sports. Things such as, like, just catch, like, not missing a birthday. Because everything happens on a Saturday night. Not missing a wedding. And I didn't realize how much that actually plays on your mental health.
Yeah,
because, like, it just brings you down. Like, oh yeah, shit, I have to miss. Like, yeah, thanks for the invite, bro, but I can't come because I gotta work. And, like, the amount of friends that I've lost touch with because of this excuse that I've got to work.
Yeah,
is it worth it?
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, you be the judge.
I feel like also COVID, especially. I'm just speaking for myself and my own experience, but I feel as if COVID has made a lot of chefs realize the importance of work-life balance. I feel like, you know, we've all been pushing for so long, for so many years of our life, trying to, you know, attain something. But I think COVID kind of, like, pulled us all back and said, you know, as much as it was a horrible period for hospitality in general, like, every single business is still recovering from those 2 years of absolute hell. But I think a lot of us actually took a step back and went, like, why am I working 60 hours a week?
Yeah.
You know, why am I pushing 80 hours a week? Like, what am I doing? What else am I doing outside of my time at work that's actually benefiting my mental health and my emotional health? And, you know, and like you said, losing those friendships and all that kind of stuff, you know, those are important things that, you know, people don't realize. And I think COVID kind of was a good, in a sense, a good, like, wake up call for a lot of us.
Yeah. As kind of, like, as harsh as it sounds, for me, it was a necessary like stop button.
Yeah.
It's just like, just stop, take a step back and have a look at the things around you. Because I think, yeah, as chefs, it's always just like heads down, bums up, like with the blinders on. You know, you finish off the night, like doing the prep list, putting the ordering through. And, you know, by the time you step out of the back door, you're already thinking about how you're going to tackle that prep list the next day.
Yeah, exactly.
So your mind's always just like work, 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 work. That, like that Rihanna song.
yes.
And COVID was just like all of a sudden like, oh, well, there is other things to do in life. And there's other things to enjoy. It was even just as like for me being able to spend like more time with my family, and you know, how much I realized I actually missed just being around them.
Yeah.
Because like when they'd see me, I'd be really, really tired, and I just, you know, I'd be there, but I wasn't present.
Yeah.
Because I was just wrecked, and then I'd have a meal and then probably like fall asleep or whatever, or I have to do ordering. And now, especially with my little one, even with us opening the store right after he was born, like I realize how precious time is, because like, you know, you turn around one day and your little newborn baby is crawling.
I know, they grow so fast, eh?
Yeah. So it's really, yeah, COVID put a lot of things in perspective, and I think it's putting a lot of things in perspective for both employers and employees.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it was finally, I don't know, maybe it's that catalyst to kind of push that change now of like, all right, well, especially, well, even for us, like, I'm not tooting our own horn, but we work in the kitchen in Carrollton 38 hours a week,
yep,
max. I mean, it's a bit more right now because we just opened and we're trying to get used to systems, but like when we were at Footscray, it was like 38 max.
Yep.
We're pushing for, we're working towards only doing 4 days a week as well.
Yep.
So you do, you know, your 36 hours in those 3 days, oh, sorry, 4 days, and you get 3 days off.
Yeah.
And it's just that, and paying people properly.
Yeah.
Like proper award rate. And actually even we pay above award rate. And if somebody says, hey, I've got a wedding this Saturday, or, you know, I've got a date this Sunday, I really want to go on a date this Saturday. or, you know, even like things like, oh, you know, I always got church on Sundays.
Yeah.
So it's like taking all those things to account, because those things are meaningful in other people's lives.
Yeah.
And I feel like, especially when I was young, like I didn't have the courage to go up to chef and be like, hey, can I have this Saturday off because X, Y, and Z? He'd just be like, what are you talking about? You just
that would
started
be so here. Taboo.
Like, you haven't earned it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and now I just get texts every week like, hey, can I have the Saturday off? I'm like, yeah, sure, no worries.
So,
but it's good.
Yeah, definitely. So what is your advice? Like, obviously now you're a parent of a son that's, you know, below the age of 2, you know, and you're juggling being a business owner. Like, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of chefs out there who are about to start a family, thinking of starting a family. Do you have any advice for, you know, chefs who are in that position?
Yeah, definitely. Don't try to do it all by yourself. Like, I have an amazing team working in Carrollton.
Yep.
Who make it run day in and day out. Like, sometimes I get in the way. And that should be the, you know, that as a business owner, I feel like that. And Sean Quaid, one of my mentors and like one of the first chefs I really worked for that took me under his wing, that's what he instilled in me, was like, you need to work hard so that you could eventually be obsolete.
Yeah.
And that's how you become a business owner, working on the business as opposed to working in the business.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing now how a lot of the guys at Carrollton have stepped up and like, yeah, literally I'll be doing the smaller jobs, like, or I'd just be really literally be in the way. But also, you know, build a great team to work on the business with you.
Yeah.
It's super hard to, like, everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. Like, I like to think of myself as a really creative person. I love marketing. I'm very extroverted. So, you know, those are the things that I take care of in Caraton.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, we play to my strengths. I'm not very, I'm going to say this out loud. I'm not very good at like, at budgeting and all the number stuff. I'm a typical fine dining chef. If they let me, I will get a Cetra caviar tomorrow.
Oh my God.
And I will
God.
Figure out how to put that on the menu. And that's, you know, those are things that Min takes care of. And Min's also very methodical. So whilst I take care of the creative stuff, Min, he's the one that tinkers with the formulas and makes sure it's all like it all works.
Yep.
And he takes care of all the accounting and the budgeting and all that stuff. And Michael, our other partner, takes care of he took care of all the fit outs.
Yeah.
Because Min and I can't pick up hammer and, you know, hammer a nail in. And on top of that, because Michael's a little bit older than us, he's got a lot of experience and wisdom in the business side of things. So he's helped us really tidy up the business and find opportunities for it. And, you know, Connie, who is now our general manager, she is amazing with people, amazing with the customer service side of things. And, you know, she's essentially taken that under her wing, and she's the one that's growing that and training all the new staff and taking care of everything front of house side. And we work, you know, we work on our strengths. Like we put in a basketball analogy because we love basketball. Like, you know, Michael Jordan was great, but Michael Jordan wouldn't have won 6 rings if there wasn't a great team around him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm Michael Jordan at all. Okay. But you need to build a great team and find great people to work with to complement the skills that are lacking.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, you still get to know all the different parts of your business. But yeah, you know, go, you know, work with people that will complement your skills. And yeah, I'll stop rambling now.
So I'm guessing apart from like obviously finding the right people to work with, what is your advice to like young, I mean, I think every young chef dreams of opening their own business, whether it's a wine bar, restaurant, gelato business. Like, what is your advice to someone who is working in the industry now, who is thinking of taking that step? Like, what should they be considering before, you know, taking that leap of faith?
The first thing you really got to think about is, are you committed? Like, how committed are you? Because it's going to be a lot of long days, long nights, sleepless nights. It's going to be a lot of hard work. Are you willing to do the things you don't want to do? You know, are you willing to demolish the floor of whatever site you're going to get? You know,
yeah.
You need to ask yourself those questions. Because the thing is, like, not everybody is like destined to have their own business.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of young chefs before, and it's like, and a lot of them who were unsure about whether they still wanted to become chefs or not. It's like, you know, it's not a failure whether or not you own your own business or you work within a business. Like, you kind of just have to have a good, like, talk to yourself and be like, is this really what I need in my life right now, or what I want in my life? Because once you take that jump, like, you need to be all in.
Yeah, because I mean, it's all your money, and it's more than just your menu at that point. It's also like you're more invested when it's your own venture.
That's it. Like, you know, it's your money. It's not just your name anymore. Like, your name, like, the name is easy to like build up again.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, you go in hiding, go into hiding for like 5 months and come back. You'll be good. But when it's your money and it's your livelihood, like, and it all relies on you, you need to know that you want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's my biggest thing, like my I guess not my biggest thing, my biggest advice, because Yeah, because you, I don't know what I'm talking about here, but I'm thinking about like my family, right? Like,
yeah.
I could have easily just said, no, I don't want to run my own business and I'd rather take care of my family and be with my family and whatnot. And that's not a bad thing. It's not, but yeah,
looking,
I don't know where I'm going with anymore.
But looking at, so looking back, obviously now you've been a chef for so many years, you've worked in great restaurants, you own your own business, you're a father. So share with me, what is the biggest lesson that you've taken away from all these years that you've been a part of the hospitality industry? What is the one thing that you've learned that you will forever pass down and pass forward to your, the chefs that work under you and, you know, your staff that work with you?
It's always got to be do the basics well.
Yeah.
Like, the basics are your foundation to everything. It doesn't matter what you do, if it's professionally or personally, you know, do the basics well. Be a great person, be a nice person, help when you can, take care of each other. And then when it comes to, you know, being a chef, you know, rely on those basics, because those basics give you confidence in what you do. As I said before, you don't build a house on poor foundation. You know, really build up that foundation, so that you know that everything that you put on top of that will stand strong. I'd see a lot of young chefs try to run before they walk.
Yeah.
And you know, try to do all these crazy techniques before even like knowing how to chop an onion.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, one thing that always stuck with me when I was a young chef was, like, I remember in Rockpool one day, I think we all just got like new knives and we were like, oh, you know, this knife's $300, or this knife's $500, this knife's from Japan. And I remember Phil was like, why are you guys buying new, such expensive knives? Go buy a spoon. Like, start tasting everything, start eating out, invest in your palate, invest in your mind. And that will take you further than any $500 knife will.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all just kind of that, like, basics, that humility to keep learning and building upon that. That's my biggest advice to any young chef.
Do you have any regrets in your career? Something that you could go back and change again, like, or done differently?
Like,
deep questions that make you think. Well,
you know, the cliche answer is like, no. Well, if I would say, like, I would say no, because even the bad times, even the times that really, really took me to the edge, I had to go through them to be where I am today.
Yeah.
So do I regret anything? No. I mean, I look back and I be like, I can't believe I cooked that, or I can't believe I put that on the menu, or there. I look back and I like think, I could have done that differently, but I don't never regret it. I never be like, oh, you know, like what a waste or what a shame. Because all of that, I feel like, was a lesson that culminated to where I am now.
Yeah.
All the good, the bad, like even the bad, like the bad taught me how I didn't want to run things, or how I didn't want to have a company culture, or you know, how I didn't want to work. So I took lessons from everything. I don't regret anything at all. There is one thing I regret: not ever asking for like important birthdays or the weddings off.
Yeah.
Because I look at, like, now that I have time to look at people's pictures, I'm like, where was I there? And they're like, dude, you were working.
Yeah.
I remember one of my best mates, he always has his birthday is like December 20. So his party is always like December 2019 or something. You can never ask for that
never.
Saturday off.
Oh my God, never. It's taboo, man.
Never, right? So like for 10 years that I've been working as a chef in a restaurant, I never went to his birthday party. So from like 18, like for after 18 to about like, well, 26 when COVID started, I couldn't go to any of his birthday parties. And like, we're still close friends, But like, yeah. Well,
it's those milestones that you look back on that you're like, I wish I was there, I think, yeah, more than anything else.
I feel like that regret, you know, it makes me not want other people to lose out on that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not much of a regret. I just kind of just like, man.
And it's so funny, right? I think we were both brought up in the era where asking for a Saturday off, asking for a Friday off, asking for a Sunday off was like, you are viewed as a villain if you even dared to ask for those weekends off, you know? And you're like constantly feeling that you need to sacrifice that time in order to prove yourself worthy to your chef. You know? And I think like times have changed now. And I think that's great. Like, I'm glad that people don't have to sacrifice that time anymore.
Yeah. Like, this life's too short to not enjoy those moments.
Yeah. So what's your favorite flavor of gelato that you have created?
I hate them all. No, I'm joking.
Okay, then.
Next. No, my favorite.
Durian, right?
No, that's your favorite. You actually complained last time you came to
I cannot believe I like have to... I'm going to write it on Google Review. I was like, did not have my durian one star.
One star. Yeah. Yeah, thanks. But it's just anonymous user.
Anonymous user, that's right.
Yeah. My favorite flavor that we ever created, I think, is our one in a melon flavor.
Oh, yeah?
So it's a trio of melon sorbets. It's honeydew, rock melon, and watermelon.
Yum.
And it's inspired by the, you know, when you go to Yumcha and you get those melon cups.
Yeah.
But I never get a melon cup because, you know, melon cup, mango pudding, there's only one answer to that, let's be honest. But I just really love that, like, three-color kind of thing. We go down absolutely making it because we have to churn three sorbets just for one tin.
Yep.
But when you eat it, like, what's amazing about it is that the three melons don't actually all, like, well, you'd think that they'd all just, like, they'd come together and it'd be just one generic taste of melon. But all the three different melons kind of that's the wrong word. But like they get sensed in different parts of your mouth.
That's amazing.
Which is really, really cool. So you still get all these different sensations of melon.
Yeah.
So that's one I was really, really proud of. And I love eating it. We're actually going to bring that back soon. We're just waiting for all the melons to ripen.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out for that one.
I definitely will. Especially now that you are basically like a 5-minute walk from work. I'll be seeing you very often.
Dangerous.
Very, very dangerous.
Now you'd be able to smell when I open the durian and you'd be like, ah.
I'll be just there in the morning.
I can make that one star into a 5-star.
I have a very controversial question for you. So I've asked both Adam and Malin this same question, and I think it's going to be a reoccurring theme in every single podcast I do. So do you think pineapple belongs on pizza?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, I'm Filipino though, because, like, you know, that was just always a thing. Well, yeah, like, why not?
Oh my god, so much hate for this pineapple, I tell you. But
well, look, I run an Asian gelato store, so I've already offended Italians, haven't I? So I may as well just put pineapple on pizza. It's got to be the canned stuff too, like in the syrup.
Oh my god, fresh. It's so good.
And like Don, like cubed ham, but. Is it ham?
Who knows? I think it's ham.
But what did everyone say? No? Everyone said no?
Everyone said yes. That's why I asked Adam, I asked Malin, and I was like, what do you think? And Malin's like from America, right? So obviously, and she's Chinese. And she was like, yeah, 100,000% it belongs on pizza. And even Adam, who is half Italian, said yes. So that's three for three right now.
Yeah.
Well, four, because I'm also four pineapple and pizza, please.
I feel like everybody just get caught up in like the internet. We're like, no, it shouldn't be on pizza. Like, tell me a Hawaiian isn't good. Like, tell me.
I think all the Italians that are listening in are like turning their grapes, maybe.
Well, my best mate's Italian, and like one of my best mates growing up is Italian. He would not eat pineapple on a pizza. But there shouldn't be pineapples in Italy anyway, so
that's true. So what is your favorite? What is your favorite thing to eat, like on your day off? Like, what's your go-to food?
What's my go-to food? Oh, it's a hard one. There's so many. Like, we love going out to eat.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of changed where we go out, like, especially with the baby, and I really have less time to kind of just graze or do these degustation stuff. We really love Sushi Train. Sakura Kaiten.
Oh, God, I love.
On Lonsdale Street. Because I'm also a massive Dragon Ball Z nut. I love that. But I guess, like, at home, we love Vietnamese food.
Yeah.
Like, we love the freshness of it. We love how light it is, but so flavorful and packed. Like, it was dangerous when I was working at Footscray because I'd be asking the wife, like, what do you want for dinner? And it's like, you take your pick. Bún bò Huế, pho. I tried to take home bán xiao before, and no, that didn't work. It got super soggy. But yeah, we like, I always said as well, like, Filipino food can actually take cues from, like, Thai or Vietnamese food, because it kind of needs that fresh herb or vegetable freshness in it. And I guess that's why we love Vietnamese food. We love Thai food too. Like, I really, really love just a good papaya salad with sticky rice.
Yep.
And I always get mild. But for some reason, Thai mild is not the same as John mild. Like, my idea of mild. Yeah. It's just, and then they're looking at me like, you okay? And I'm like, uh-huh. Another milk tea, please.
So where's the best papaya salad in Melbourne?
Oh, that's not controversial. I don't know. I love Nana Thai.
Yeah.
If you can brave the line.
Yeah.
Dodi Padang is really nice too. But learn how to make it mild. No.
Gotta cater for John's palate, guys.
I really love the papaya salad with, like, the pickled crab.
Yep.
In it. And yeah, just that over sticky rice. Like, I'm done. As in, like, I'm satisfied and I am done because it's too hot.
So do you have any last words for all our listeners today? You did really well. We're like about an hour in.
I really, it's just, they're probably sick of me already. Like, this guy just does not stop talking.
Not at all. It's so good.
Any last words? They do say I have the face for podcasts.
Face for podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I have a great face to listen to. I don't know, just, you know, enjoy eating out. We need you right now, especially in Australia. Like, go out there, support your favorite restaurant. Eat out when you can, eat out often. And the hospitality industry thanks you for it.
Yeah, that's some good words. That's some really good words to end on, because, like, I think a lot of hospitality business need our support right now. And, you know, if you guys want to check out John's delicious gelato, and I have to say I've had it more than once, so I can attest to the fact that it's good. Like, I would drive from where I live in Whittlesea to Footscray before you open the city just to have that Whittlesea? Durian. Yeah, man.
Damn. I thought I was far.
No, I moved in the middle of lockdown, but it's only testament to how good it is that I would drive to Footscray.
Oh, thank you.
But it's really good. Go check him out. He's, in Footscray and now in Chinatown next to Tang, which is, I always said, such a good location. Like, right here's smack a plug. In bang of it.
We're next to Cambodia's Kitchen. And if you've never been to Cambodia's Kitchen, you need to go there. Like,
I actually saw that the other day. Is it good?
The beef stew noodles with egg noodles, it's out of this world. Like, it's a hug.
All right.
It's a hug in a bowl.
Next time I walk to Carrieton to get gelato, I will drop by Cambodia's Kitchen.
Please, yes. And everybody listening, please drop by there. It's so good.
Thank you for joining me today, John. I really appreciate all your insight. And it's been a really great chat. You made this so, so easy. And I really, like, again, appreciate you taking out time from your really busy schedule to have this chat with us.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me and listening.
So thank you so much for tuning in today's episode of Principle of Hospitality. Please remember to comment, like, and share this with your friends. And I look forward to my next episode with you soon. Until then, take care and stay safe.
Today's ethos is to build solutions for hospitality businesses to retain and develop their team. We believe that the first 42 days, the first 6 weeks of someone's employment in any industry, but especially the world of hospitality, is so competitive, fast-paced, and intense. We have an opportunity to reshape that narrative. Our team has extensive experience in the hospitality industry, so we know what it takes to keep your team happy and engaged. We'll work with you every step of the way to create a plan that works best for your business. Go to 42days.co to book a consultation.